Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, can I help you find something? Librarians specialize in helping you find what you were looking for, and sometimes what you didn't know you were looking for. Thank you for joining me as I talk to my guests about all things library, including the books inside them. I'm Julie Chavez, and this is Ask a Librarian. Christine Grillo's debut novel is Hestia Strikes a Match. She is a writer and an editor whose short fiction has appeared in Story Quarterly, The Southern Review, Lit, and more. Her nonfiction covers science, public health, food systems, agriculture, and climate change, and has been published in outlets such as The New York Times, The Atlantic, City Lab, Audubon, Next Tribe, and Real Simple. Grillo earned degrees at Columbia University and the writing seminars at Johns Hopkins University, and she has been a fellow at the Virginia Center for the Creative Arts. She lives in Baltimore, Maryland. Here is my conversation with Christine. Well, welcome to Ask a Librarian, Christine. I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah, thank you, Julie. I'm really glad you asked me to do this.
I'm thrilled that you said yes. I love a successful cold call. But with you, I have to say, it's not really a cold call because you and I share the lovely agent Naomi in common. So I feel like we're already sort of on the same team or something. I love it.
I know. We have joint custody of Naomi, and I think we also have joint custody of Jane, too.
We do have joint custody. I love that. Yes, you are friends with the lovely and talented Jane Delury, who is just a delight and someone that I'm so thankful I'm connected to, another Zippy Books author. So her book Hedge comes out in June, but Hestia Strikes a Match, which is your book, will be out so soon. What's its exact release date? It's April 13th?
It's Tuesday, April 18th.
18th. Yeah. Oh, exciting. 18th. And this is your debut novel, correct?
This is my very first published novel, yes.
Indeed. Congratulations. How are you finding the run-up to publication so far?
I'm finding it a little exhilarating, but also pretty stressful. It's been, I feel like I have a lot of work to do around it, which I had not really anticipated, and just sort of weird, inexplicable work around that. And then there's the thrill of good reviews and then the crush of not good reviews. And so I'm sort of waiting to see, you know, hoping that nothing too soul crushing comes out.
Yes. Yes. Soon.
And I mean, it was great. The Washington Post included me in their list of 10 books for April, which was so unexpected and amazing. And
I saw that. Wonderful. So thrilling.
Yeah. At the same time, I'm also starting to, you know, I can't help myself. I know that part of self-care means not checking Goodreads, but
of course, I can't
stop myself. And so the one-star reviews have started to come in there too, which I probably shouldn't talk about on this, but there's such balance.
That's true. It's good to acknowledge the balance in the universe. We're here for it. But yeah. I am with you. I really wonder if I'm going to be able to hold back, because it is sort of, that's going to be a really tough one. I don't know. That'll be a tough one to hold, right?
I think for whatever good, positive feelings you have for yourself, just hold back.
Oh gosh. I'm going to have to take it off my, I'm going to have to put in some blocks for myself. I'll have to have my kids set a password or something crazy.
Oh, that's a really great idea.
Right? That's what I should do. I should have them change the password to my Goodreads and only they can look at it. And then,
And only if you clean up your room,
100%.
Then I'll give you the password, right?
It's like you're at my house, because literally that statement was just issued by my husband to my son.
Clean up your room. It's one of his favorite things to say. That and get ready for bed, which is like, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, 11:30 a.m. Just get ready for bed. Just brush your teeth.
Yeah. If no one, you wouldn't believe it as a child. If someone told you that as an adult, you would want to be told to go to bed. But yes.
It is 100% correct. I agree. Well, let's talk a little bit about the book. Will you give me your elevator pitch or your summation of Hestia Strikes a Match?
Sure. It is kind of it's a dark comedy about a woman in her 40s who's become single all of a sudden after being married. And she is navigating the world of dating in your 40s, dating apps. And it's also the beginning of a civil war in the United States. It's set pretty much this year in 2023. And so while navigating all of this dating stuff, she's also really trying to figure out friendships and how to have meaning through connection with people, especially in a scary time.
Yes. Yeah. I have to say, I loved this book. I was such a fan. I will make sure I give it 5 stars on Goodreads and I'll downvote some of the other ones. But, you know, the things I was looking back, so I read it when we confirmed this interview. So a while back, I couldn't wait to read it. I was so excited. And Naomi was telling me how much she loved it. And so I picked it up and I had highlighted all these passages. So I went back today before our interview and I was looking through them and I was remembering the feel of the book. And it is sharp in all the best ways. It's well written. It's tight. It's your descriptions are just so accurate and pointed. And it's a joy to read. I really loved it. And one of the other things I loved is I really was rooting for Hestia. I loved her. I was rooting for her. She annoyed me. She was so human, and you wrote her with such life and honesty. It was such a joy to read. So I think that it was a fantastic book, and I'm not surprised that it's getting included in all these lists because it was just so perfectly placed too.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. My early reviewers said something that I thought was so accurate about it. She said, I just want to reach across the table and shake Hestia.
Yes. I couldn't agree more.
She's a frustrating person.
Yes. Yeah. Now, okay, let's talk about now. I don't know, how woo-woo are you about your characters? Like, do they come to you in the night, like little visions? Or is it more you had a vision to create her? I mean, how did you find her?
Yeah, so she is really, I think, probably a version of me.
Okay.
I would like to think a less mature version of me. I hope I'm more mature than she is.
I have no doubt.
But I think that character really came from personal frustrations. You know, I started writing the book in the middle of the Trump administration, and I was just so, you know, you reach a point where you can only stare dead-eyed at the news on your phone so much longer, and then you have to just start finding the humor in things, right?
Yes.
And so I just started writing that stuff down and imagining what it would be like to be in a civil war and to have Confederate minded people showing their asses the way they do all the time. And so Hestia just seemed like a very even more like frustrated, angry, confused version of myself. But then other characters, I'm not really sure, you know, there's a character in there named Mildred who is an 80 something. She's the best friend of Hestia. And I'm not sure where she came from. I think she's just an amalgamation of all these wonderful older ladies in my life what I love about older women is they don't hold back.
That is so true. Yes.
Yes. And sometimes it's not great. I had a grandmother who would always, she'd like adjust her dentures and she'd say how much her dentures were hurting her, and she'd say, "Don't get old, kid."
That's amazing.
I thought, what is the alternative?
Yeah. Do I have an option?
Right.
Oh my gosh.
But just older ladies, I had a great aunt by marriage who would ask me about my sex life all the time. And I just thought, this is so much fun.
Yes, it is. It feels like the culmination, and I'm starting to experience this more as I'm in, you know, getting to my mid 40s, where it's, and that's still early days for it, but it just, when I think back to being 20 and just, and all the things I was carrying, and you care less in a lot of the right ways. So I can see how, yes, my filter will just slowly be eroded until one day I'm just like a walking problem, just spewing whatever comes to mind.
Just an unfiltered fountain. Yes.
But there's a freedom to that, and a real embracing, I think, especially since we're so socialized to think before we speak, and, you know, this kind
of, especially women. Yes. I mean, we don't want to say the wrong thing, and we don't want to seem too hungry or too, we don't want to have needs, and
it's impossible. Being a woman is so impossible. And so to reject some of that as we get older is like, it feels so good, and to see it in shifts. So I love that you have those different ages, and I loved Mildred, of course. I had some of the lines I marked when you were talking. So this is Hestia speaking. I had a special knack for draining the joy out of beautiful things, which I'd been perfecting for more than 40 years. And I love her self-awareness, like the mix of her immaturity and self-awareness.
Yeah.
She's just so perfectly suited that way. I also really liked, two-factor authentication felt like a slow death.
Oh, God. Like every day for me.
That's how I feel about the CAPTCHA thing, right?
Yes.
Like there's that, or we're going to call you or text you the code. There are so many things I haven't even, like, I'll try to do something and then I just give up halfway through. It's the worst.
Right. I had to really hold myself back when writing about the workplace, because there was just so much that I wanted to complain about the modern workplace in that book. And then I was like, okay, you're going too far. You're like, nobody cares about content management systems and how awful they are as much as you do.
The book would become just a place to air all your grievances.
Yes. But I did try to get some of that mundanity of the workplace there, and how, I mean, I remember older people telling, when I was in my 20s, and I was in shock about the fact that I had to work and like get up and go to work every day, and that it was never going to end, and there's never summer vacation. And people would say, well, you know, there are three P's, and you're lucky if you get two of them. And I think it's like pay, people, and I forget what the third P was, but it had something to do with having a purpose. That's what it was. Pay, people, and purpose. And so I feel like the people are really what is so much what keeps a person happy at work. And that's definitely true for Hestia in this book, is she goes to work to see the people, and because she has to make a living. But
I really like the way that you set that up, because it does give this, I think one of my favorite things of the book is that she's in this stressful environment, but it really is the ordinary in her life that is fortifying. Mm-hmm. And that kind of idea that we are grounded by the ordinary in our life, even though we're sometimes longing for, you know, of course we want the transcendent and we want all these other things, but it just, I really love that about Hestia's arc and her journey, because it feels like she's coming around to what is actually going to keep her grounded and happy.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was something that I thought about a lot when trying to build the world of a civil war. Because civil war is scary, I mean, not that I know, I've never been in one, but I work with a human rights organization. And so I know a little bit about civil war. And I think one of the things that I keep being drawn to is that you still have to do these like daily living things that are so tedious. You still have to make your bed and mow the lawn and
yes.
pack your kids' lunch. Like they still, even in Civil War, kids still go to school, right?
Right.
So it's, yeah, that's what kind of tethers you.
Yep.
Your day to day. And so, like I said, I was writing this during the Trump administration and thinking a lot about what was happening to our country and what would it be like for my kids? I have kids who are young adults now, but at the time they were going to proms and getting their driver's licenses. And mm-hmm. I would find myself thinking, like, this stuff is still going to happen, right? Like, even if the worst happens and we go to war, we're still going to, like, have to get a prom dress.
Right.
And so that really, like, I think sometimes maybe it's possible to forget you're in a civil war.
Yes.
Yeah.
How did you, that makes a lot of sense. And I wonder if that forgetting would almost be necessary at times, because you would need, I mean, we can't live in crisis all the time. You know what I mean? Even in a crisis, there's still sort of this moment of, oh, but I have to load the dishwasher. Like, and that can be sort of a reprieve, because you end up finding, okay, this is still something that I know to do. I know how to do, as opposed to, you know, the outside. But I found a lot of lessons in that, because even though we're not in that experience, there are so many pieces of this book that feel like, oh, that is absolutely plausible. I mean, there's nothing that I think, oh, that's way outside. So it was, which is both really wonderful that you wrote it so well and completely terrifying.
Well, there are some experiences I've had since the book has been finished, where life will imitate art a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a character in the book, we never meet her, but she is the wife of a character and she is killed in like a Save a Lot or a ShopRite.
Yes.
ShopRite. And after the book was like done and the deal was made and all of that, there was that terrible shooting, you know, and so stuff like that happens. And then in the book, there are moments when, you know, the electric grid goes down in the city or the sewage system isn't working because terrorists have deliberately made that happen. Mm-hmm. And that happened in Baltimore kind of recently, where people shot up an electric substation and the electricity wasn't working. And it's like, I don't want this stuff to actually come true.
Well, 100%. So, you
know, and I'm not making it happen, but it is just a very weird.
I'm sure that is a weird experience where you're like, wow, I didn't see that being something that would jump off these pages ever. Yeah. Well,
but all of that stuff, I mean, the Civil War stuff that happens in the book is, none of it's that outrageous. It's not.
No, it's not.
Yeah. I mean, it's all perfectly within, like you said, like within reason of what could happen.
Yeah. But I think that makes it so much more, I think that's part of why I loved the book so much though. At least I found myself, I clung to Hestia a little bit, where I felt like, mm-hmm. okay, I need to be, you know, you're reading these sections about what's happening outside, but I'm focused, I'm clinging to her life in the same mm-hmm. way that I would cling to the real life that I could find in the midst of whatever crisis I was in. It just, you did such a wonderful job. How did you get into writing? Like, when did you become a writer?
Yeah, that's a great question. I had the fortune or misfortune of being told all through school, oh, you're a good writer. You should do something with that.
Oh, great.
There's this great New Yorker cartoon. I can't remember exactly how it goes, but it's a teacher telling a child, you're such a good writer. And the caption is something like, the moment Johnny's life was ruined.
think I've seen that one before. It's so true.
I didn't really do much writing in my 20s. I managed to come out of college and just work different jobs and not do a whole lot of writing. And then toward the end of my 20s, I thought, I really actually just want to do this. And so I was writing for companies that were doing CD-ROM, like games on CD-ROM.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so like kids stuff, like science-y kids stuff.
Okay, sure.
I was writing dialogue. Mrs. Frizzle, you know, Magic School Bus.
Yes, the Magic School Bus.
I was working on those.
Oh, what?
And then I finally just applied to graduate school and started, you know, moved to Baltimore and did that. And I've been doing it for a long time.
How does it feel? So you've been writing for a long time, for a number of years. How does it feel to be publishing a novel at this point in your career?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It is very weird. I'm in my 50s. And so, yeah, you know, I'm never going to be on one of those lists, you know, like top, you know, readers under 30.
Yep.
Keep track of readers under 40. I'm not even readers under 50. There are no lists.
They just, readers. Yeah, they don't seem to include, I guess 50 under 50 just doesn't have the same, or 60 under 60. Maybe the volume's too big for them. I don't know.
Right.
They really need to fix that.
So I'm not going to be on a, writers to watch list, which is actually wonderful. I do sometimes think about writers who made it pretty big when they were in their 20s. And I feel badly for them sometimes because I mean, I think my lack of success over 20 years was helpful in some way. And I don't think that having success come too early is a good thing. I think it puts a lot of pressure. I mean, I feel a lot of pressure right now to work on a good second book. And I already feel like the book I'm writing now is not anywhere near as good. And I just can't, I just can't imagine how difficult my brain was in my 20s. Just a difficult place to be was my brain.
Yes.
And to have that kind of pressure when I'm young would have been really hard, I think.
That makes complete sense to me. And I agree. I think about that pretty often, actually, because like we were talking about earlier, you know, as you're aging, you're dropping so many burdens that you didn't need to carry anyway. And so with everyone that's dropped, you have a little more space to actually see yourself and your life and all these things as they are. And so to have that perspective, you're right. That would have been so bad for my mental and emotional health. Right.
Right.
So
to suddenly become a star in your 20s when you have no skills.
No skills. And you're right. And it's funny, I'm getting to the age now where I look at some of the pop stars, and obviously our culture with celebrity is so twisted anyway, but some of these singers, young people that are having this wild success. And I tell my kids all the time, I'm like, that would mess you up so badly. I mean, if you can come out of that even halfway unscathed, then you are good to go because that is intense. So I love that perspective for you where it's, you know a little bit more where to put things and your mind is a better place to be, to hold those one-star reviews, right?
That's right.
But we're going to change your password and we're going to make it two-factor authentication.
Oh, then I'll never go
I can't
on.
Yeah. Wait. Give me your Goodreads password. I'll fix your red wagon. But I really appreciate that. So when you were doing in your other writing, so your master's was, did you get an MFA?
It's an MA, but yes, I got an MA at the Johns Hopkins writing seminars.
Johns Hopkins. I've heard of them.
Yeah.
And what do you do in your spare time when you're not writing? You also have a day job, I hear.
I have a day job. I have a couple of jobs. My job that I do that gives me my health insurance is science writing. So I work with researchers at the Hopkins School of Public Health, and I work with them to write about food systems, which can be anything from like how cows and pigs are raised to how SNAP benefits work for low-income people. So they investigate those issues and I try to write about them in a way that makes sense for non-scientists. I also do freelance work for a human rights organization, which is called Human Rights Data Analysis Group in San Francisco. And so I've been working with them for about 10 years and they do a lot of math voodoo and I try to write about the math voodoo in a way that makes sense. So I'm a translator, basically.
You really are. Do you enjoy that work?
It's really great. I mean, there is kind of a thrill about finally being able to understand something that's so esoteric.
Yes.
But then, and then having to be like, okay, now that I understand it, how do I explain it? Because I finally got it.
Yes.
But it is. I love languages. And so I love thinking about all the very specialized words that happen in these fields and how they all mean different things. And yeah, it's pretty, it keeps my brain alert.
Absolutely. I think that would be so interesting because I too am that would be something I think I would enjoy because I'm a science minded person. I think that I love that idea. And when I get a new concept, it's just so satisfying to think, oh, I'm still, monkeys can learn. I'm still capable. My brain hasn't been atrophied by Vanderpump Rules yet. Hooray! Right.
There's a little plasticity left in this brain yet.
Hallelujah. Hope is not lost. So I think that sounds really exciting. And you're right to be able to translate it. And it's important information. So to be able to share that with the public is, I could imagine that being really satisfying.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I love.
Yeah. It's a world. I mean, we're inundated with content now, so it's really hard to find a way. It's not as bad now, but there were 4 years there where it was hard for any news to come to light because of crazy stuff that was happening. But yeah, I mean, when people choose to listen to a new thing, that's such an honor because they have so much stuff coming at them and they choose to listen to this podcast. Like, wow.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Such a compliment. Yeah.
You're right. Well, because they have unlimited choice and limited time. So for someone to choose to spend minutes with you in any format is a gift. And I'm sure you feel that way about the book as well, right? Where it's like that people will read it. It's just so thrilling to me.
I know. I know. Like you spent all those hours reading that book. That's wow. It immediately makes me want to go out and read their book. Even if they don't have a book, maybe you should write a book so I could read it.
100%. Yes. How do I pay you back for this?
It's right.
The time. I love hearing about that. So you do the science writing. What would you say? So are you working? You said you're working on another novel.
I am. Okay. I'm very slowly plodding through this novel. And I think one of the things, it's a little more serious. It's more set. It's set on the eastern shore of Maryland, and it's about a woman who's like my age with older children, trying to figure out. It's set sort of post-apocalypse, like not post-apocalypse, like pre-apocalypse, I guess.
Okay. Okay.
The world has changed a lot.
Okay.
And they need to do things. They need to make a move. They need to do something.
Got it.
And so one of the things I keep running into is people who read Hestia always tell me, oh, it's so funny. I laughed so much when I read that book. And I always think, ah, what I'm writing right now is not funny.
It's not going to be funny. You know, that's so true. The pressure to produce, yes. Not only produce something else, but something good and something that's in line.
Yes.
I completely understand that. I will say I asked Joanna Rakoff about that once because she wrote My Salinger Year, but she wrote A Fortunate Age prior to that. I think that was first. But anyway, she's written a novel and she's written in both genres, memoir and novel. Mm-hmm. But we talked about the second book thing because I think I said the whole idea sounds absurd to me. I don't know. How do you do that? And then how do you? And right. For me, starting with memoir, I was saying, you know, how do I then do fiction? Are people even going to want to read that? Or will they just think, no, I just want... Like, I just want from Christine Grillo what Christine Grillo already gave me, which is, again, another funny, sharp novel that looks just like this boilerplate, which, of course, I mean, unless you're one of these amazing writers that can just churn these out, I don't know that that's in the future for many of us. But what she said is, you don't need to worry about that. She said, just write a good book.
Right.
Don't compare it.
And she's very wise. Yeah.
Yes, she is very wise. And I was like, okay, perfect. Just write a good book. Let me write that on a sticky note and then I'll put it right here and that will solve all my problems. Just write a good book. But there is a truth to it, right? Where it's this, and maybe that's exactly what we're talking about. All these, the voices, the thoughts, the shoulds, the how am I going to make this work?
How am I going to give the people what they seem to want?
Yes, yes.
It's the people-pleasing that comes out again.
Yes. Golly, people-pleasing. It's going to be the death of us all, right? But we're so delightful on our way down, right? I will happily, yes. I'm driving, but sure, I can hold that for you. No problem. It's great.
Right.
Oh, I can totally see that. Well, that's very exciting, and I will read your novel even if it's not funny.
Okay.
I'm excited because your writing, I think, can, there were, I really liked your writing. I think it's just tremendously talented. And you do a good job, too, of balancing the, I struggle sometimes with novels that have too much description. They bore me. And yours was really well balanced. It's not too dialogue heavy. It was a joy to read.
Thank you. It's such an interesting thing, too, because I have a lot of writer friends and we all read each other's work and comment on it and help each other out. And one thing I've noticed is just in the 20 years that I've been writing, and I think it's just the world and the media that we're inundated with, I feel like it's harder to get away with longer descriptions now.
That's interesting. I think you're right.
Like I want dialogue. Because there's so many amazing TV shows and movies, and that's the water that we swim in.
Yes.
And every now and then I'll pick up a Virginia Woolf book and start reading it. And I think, would this be published today?
Interesting.
You know, what would an editor say to Virginia Woolf?
That would be a great book, right? To bring some of those people into the present day and they have to come work at a publishing house.
This is a podcast idea, Julie. Get an editor to give you his or her accounting of famous novels.
How would we approach
it today?
Great idea. And that would be really good for me because I should say that I feel like I'm not as well read as I should be in the classics. So that would kill multiple birds with one stone. Ooh, very exciting. I'll ask my editor.
Thomas Hardy with all those long descriptions of the Moors.
If I could survive it, I'd probably just be, I did make the kids, not make, but I did a fifth grade book club years ago and I chose Little Women. Like, how cruel is that? I mean, they're young for that. Right. So I ended up giving them a sticker at the end that said, I read a big fat book, because I was like, you deserve a medal for finishing that puppy.
They deserve that.
Yes. Sure. Well, So exciting to hear what you're working on next. I do want to ask you just about, what do you think is your best, what would be your best wisdom? You have a lot of writer friends. You have a lot of, you know, you're very much in the writing world. What mm-hmm. would be your best, not even best, what's a piece of wisdom that you would share with someone who's just starting out?
Well, I like Joanna's piece of wisdom, so I'll bounce off of that a little bit, which is don't worry so much about the publishing. Just write something good. Like, start with that.
Yes.
I think sometimes people who are new to it get very caught up in, well, what journals should I be submitting to? And should I go to this workshop? And like, who should I get to know? And
yes.
And I think just focus on the writing and also do a lot of reading. Reading is really important.
What are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? I am reading Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel.
Yes, author Station 11.
Yes.
How are you liking it? I've heard mixed reviews. I mean, I've heard it's amazing, but people have had different experiences with it. What's your experience so far?
Well, I'm only 20% of the way through, which I know because I'm reading it on an audiobook. Oh,
love and I audiobooks. Love how big
you are, 17% of the way through with this book.
Yes. It makes me feel excited. I'm like, oh, yay. Okay, good for me.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I like her writing. I find that there's just, she has so much to say about every single character in the book, even if it's like the most minor character. She tells you their whole life history in like four sentences.
It's amazing how some writers can do that. I'm always really impressed by people that can weave that in without it being laborious, but I also wonder, where did they come up with that? Like, do some, you know, I think the whole where characters come from is really fascinating.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I'm interested in this book because it's only 6 hours long, which is such a short book for her.
It is a short book for her. I know, I'm excited to read it. I, like many books on my shelf, have it in hardcover, even though it's already out in paperback and I have not yet read it. And my brother just came to visit and I said, let's go to the bookstore. And he goes, you have a color coordinated bookstore right here. And I said, get out. You're dead to me. And my kids were so happy. They were like, we always tell her that. This is great. Uncle Brian should come visit more.
Yeah. Well,
with traders.
Whenever my daughter lives in New York and whenever I visit her, we've fallen into this pattern where what we do is we go to a bookstore, a different bookstore every time.
Of course.
And I, you know, end up buying her a book or two, and then we go out to dinner. So that's our, and there are so many bookstores in New York to go to. I don't think we're going to run out.
So many worthy bookstores to support and be at. I love being among books. Bury me among the books. Like, that's just, it's where it is. Well, I have one final non-important question for you. And that is this. So you're finishing this sentence. Few people know I could talk for hours about what?
Native plants.
Okay. Are you a gardener?
I'm a gardener but I'm one of those like evil purist gardeners I do have tulips and daffodils and hyacinths and all that stuff, but if anyone listening is a fan of Douglas Tallamy, I'm really into his sort of building yards and lawns and habitats that are micro suited to where you live, really into growing things that benefit the wildlife around. Like I like to build ecosystems. So at least that's what I want to do.
I can hear you even talking about that for hours. So that would be a really good conversation for me living in California, what with all of our green lawns and our drought and all the things.
Yes, I'm a big kill your lawn proponent. So there is a movement.
There is. You heard it here first. I mean, who knew you'd be educated on all things today on Ask a Librarian. Thank you so much, kill your lawn. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for this time. am so thrilled to talk to you and be connected to you, and so glad that we have joint custody of such fantastic people in our lives. But it really is a joy to talk to you, and I'm so excited for Hestia to be out in the world. And I just think she's going to do beautifully. And I love her. So I'm really excited for you. And just let me know when you want to send me your Goodreads password.
Okay.
I'll fix it for you.
Thank you so much, Julie. This was so much fun.
Thank you.
Really grateful. All right.
Oh, I'm thankful. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Ask a Librarian. As always, it's my joy to share and learn with you. You can follow me on Instagram at JulieWritesWords, or you can go to my website, JulieWritesWords.com. There you'll find the show notes, including all the books mentioned in the episode. See you in the stacks next week. And until then, friends, never go anywhere without a book.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.